We're going to start now. Welcome, everyone, to Peer Momentum. The purpose of Peer Momentum is simply to build community of people helping people online and face-to-face with our worldwide book club. We leverage the community's know-how and wisdom to get people into action. And today, we bring that about as Bernie Melanson came into our lives at a J. Abraham mastermind group in Los Angeles after completing a $5,000 program with J. Abraham. It was a brain trust mastermind group that came together for 2 days. And the biggest question that came about was, did everybody complete the assignment? We were there for we had J's access or access to J for 13 months, and the project was to complete a marketing plan. Now, while we were there, we noticed that not many of us had completed it. And Bernie so kindly and gently asked me if I had, and I said no. And he asked me why, and I said, well, I wasn't motivated enough. And so today we're going to go into why I really didn't and why many, 95% of those who signed up, did not complete. And I'm hoping that this call will serve those people and all people who really attend seminars or workshops and just wonder why. So, Bernie, I'd like to introduce you. You have been someone that I've recently met, but I know you have amazing insight. Your intelligence is beyond comprehension. I just love how you get deep and how you get me all the time. So welcome on this call, Bernie.
Well, thank you, Claudia. And I'm happy to be part of the Peer Momentum family or group, and it's always fun to encounter others that are on their chosen paths and moving forward. And obviously, I think what you guys are doing is great, where you're leveraging the power of the community and to take all that knowledge and share with others. So thank you for inviting me to participate.
Well, thank you. Thank you. So should we get started into, well, you prepared for us an awesome comprehensive PowerPoint or worksheet presentation that everybody can find on the peermomentum.com website. In the upper right-hand corner, you will find this evening's teleseminar, and the notes with it are in there. You just scroll down to the bottom of the page, and you will find them. So we can get started from here, Bernie.
Okay. So kind of off, and we want to make this a little freeform, because oftentimes when you can just take the topic from the top of your head, it actually gets a little more interesting. So if I jump around a little bit, I apologize, but I do have a habit of bringing people back. So Claudia, as she mentioned, we met at a seminar about a little over 2 weeks ago, 2 to 3 weeks ago. And as she mentioned, there were many people who had joined a mentoring program with J. Abraham. And if you're not familiar with him, he's often touted as the highest paid marketing strategic guru who gets paid $5,000 an hour. And so over 1,000 people signed up for the myriad of programs he had, and there were like five groups of about 200 people apiece. And what was interesting is he also charges between $10,000, $15,000, $25,000 for a seminar, 2 or 3 day seminar. So it was a great deal for $5,000 to participate because you got the seminar as well. But out of the 1,000 people who were authorized or allowed to come as part of the program, probably only 200 came, so only 20%. So right there you start to see that 80-20 rule coming into play. And we saw over the course of the calls, and I still have a few left to go in my program, typically 140 people are supposed to be on my call, and you might get 10 or 15 to show up.
Right.
Which didn't make a lot of sense, because if you're going to spend that money and then
it
not
happened
partake
to my group too, yes.
Yeah, you know, why is that? So that's the kind of 80-20 rule. And then again, as we talked about, and Claudia mentioned, there's a template that he required us to fill out and to get going. And he even said that, you know, this is where people start to hit the skids a little bit. And I would say out of the 200 people at the event, maybe 50 of us had done it. So then we're getting down in that 95.5. And that sparked the conversation. And if you can humor me for a second, as I was sitting next to Claudia at the table, and Jay was announcing another program coming up, and I was trying not to eavesdrop, but she was talking to a colleague of hers, and I heard the term, you know, not another seminar. You know, this, here we go again. And I tried to bow out, but I tend to butt in sometimes. And so at the very end, I said, you know, I couldn't help but overhear. I didn't mean to eavesdrop, but I might have something that's a little bit useful for you. You know, would you mind if I shared it with you? And that's kind of led to the seminar tonight. And a lot of what we talked about at that point and then in the last week or two is kind of why people do what they do and why they don't do what they do. So one of the quotes I like is saying that not, in some cases, it's not that we're necessarily looking for the truth, but we're looking for lies that work. And what I mean by that is you have to find kind of what works for you, because quite often you'll hear someone else tell the story of what has worked for them, but for a variety of reasons, it may or may not work for you, and it may or may not be appropriate for you. So I put some slides together, and this has actually been good for me because it's helped me take a bunch of different points and drill them down. I know a few people don't have the slides. I'll try to refer to them, but I'll also try to amplify kind of the thought. So if you're not sitting in front of the slides, don't worry about it. So the title that I kind of came up with, which is a play on other things, is Advance or Die. And the original subtitle was How to Be Ethically Ruthless in Taking Focused, Disciplined, and Clear Action to Achieve Your Goals in an Attention Deficit World. And then yesterday I came up with a better one I thought called Treadmills, Tracks, and Roads, Which Race Are You Running? Because, as we'll talk about this in a moment, you can have a lot of momentum and a lot of energy but not actually end up going very far or going anywhere, and there's a variety of reasons for that. So my background, which is on slide two, I actually reformatted this slide because although each of us has the things we're dealing with, most people don't live in a vacuum. So at the highest level these days, I'd say I am Elena's husband and Anna and James's daddy. And if you see the slide, you'll see a picture of me and my family and my two kids. I'm also an internet entrepreneur, an author and self-publisher, so I'm working on some books right now and have my website up, which you see the banner across the top, RareSuccessSecrets.com, looking at books, audio CDs, and affiliate sales. And I also work a full-time day job currently. So a lot of what I'm doing is bootstrapping and putting these things in place. And that's really where the whole concept of ethical ruthlessness comes about. And we'll cover what that is as we go down. So let me take you to A Tale of Two Gurus, which is in slide three, which is a little story I like, about enlightenment. So there was a seeker seeking enlightenment who had been searching far and wide and went to the guru, guru number one, and said, Master, I've been looking for enlightenment. Can you tell me what to do? You're the enlightened master. And the master said, well, if you're looking for enlightenment, and are you serious about this? And he says, yes, I'm very serious. He said, well, let me tell you what you need to do. Every morning when you get up, before you do anything else, you need to go to the bathroom mirror and look in the mirror and say to yourself for 10 minutes a day, who am I? Who am I? Who am I? Ask yourself this question for 3 years, and about the 3-year point, you should reach enlightenment. And the seeker said, is that it? And the guru said, that's it. But that didn't sit well with the seeker because he said, wait a minute, it can't be that simple. I don't get it. I'm going to get a second opinion. So he went over to Guru 2. And he went to Guru 2 and he said, Master, you know, I've been seeking enlightenment. What do I have to do? And the guru said, oh, it's a very difficult path. It's very challenging. Are you prepared to do whatever it takes? And the seeker said, yes, of course. We'll do whatever it takes. Well, he said, well, we have an ashram outside of town, and it's pretty full, but we do have one spot available, and it's cleaning the latrines. But if you want to seek enlightenment and be humbled, I'm willing to let you perform this action for us. And the man said, ah, this is what I'm talking about. I knew it was hard work, but this will give me the secret. So he said, yes, I'll join the ashram. And he started working in the ashram, cleaning out the latrines, and he did this for the first year and the second year, and he started to get despondent, but he said, no, I'm going to keep working at this. And year three went by, and four, and five, and six, and finally, about year seven, he's really getting really, really tired and really fed up, but he knows he has to work hard to achieve enlightenment, and the master's testing him. So at year seven, he goes to the master, and he said, Master, I've been with the ashram for 7 years now. And the master said, yes, and you've done a wonderful job for us. And the seeker says, when will I be ready for enlightenment? And the master says, I think now is the time for you to be ready for enlightenment. So the guy's all overjoyed, and he says, Master, tell me what I have to do. And the guru says, every morning, first thing you do, get up and go to the mirror, and for 10 minutes a day, say to the mirror, who am I? Who am I? Who am I? And after about 3 years, you should reach enlightenment. And the seeker said, wait a minute, that's what the first guru told me. And the second guru said, yeah, he's right, that's what you do. And the whole point of that story is, quite often, we think it's got to be this really, really hard path. And for some it is, but for others it's not. And if you're not careful, you can get fixated on what you think it's going to take, potentially what they tell you it's going to take. But you really never drill down to what it honestly takes to develop a skill or develop an outcome. So if you go to slide four, and this is from Michael Masterson, who some of you may subscribe to Early to Rise or his copywriting course with America Writers and Artists Institute, but I like it, and you can play with the numbers, but he talks about what does it take to develop skills or proficiencies. Now, in my previous life, I used to be in the Navy, and I was actually on an aircraft carrier working on radar systems flying in, off of aircraft carriers. And it's very interesting, and I'll touch on some J. Abraham points in the conversation. He talks a lot about this, of developing a skill. You don't just read a book and do open-heart surgery, and you don't just, you know, play a video game and then jump in a car and be an excellent driver. It takes time to develop proficiency and skill. So the little equation I use is outcome equals action plus advancement over time, or times time. So there's actions and there's advancement that you really need to be moving forward, but it takes time. And the Masterson numbers were to develop competency, become adequate or proficient, takes about 1,000 hours. I think it's probably closer to maybe 500 or 600, but bottom line, it takes some time. So if you were to devote an hour a day to your personal development, and let's say it takes 500 hours, you really have to understand it may take you about a year to get pretty proficient at something. Now, if you can do 2 or 3 hours a day, you can shorten that time frame. If you can devote full time, then you can make it really short. Mastery or superiority, about 5,000 hours, and then world-class virtuosity, the J. Abraham levels and some other experts, 25 to 30,000 hours. The challenge we all face quite often is when we see them at the mastery or the virtuosity level, and quite often they don't talk a whole lot about the trials and travails that they went through. Some do, but not everybody. But what happens is these things take time, and if you're in the mood to have quick results, you know, quite often that kind of pulls you aside. So if you look at slide five, and for those who can't follow along, if you could imagine a series of hills kind of connected, and this is plotted on a graph, and I worked this out this morning, where on the y-axis or your vertical axis is effort, and on your horizontal axis is time. Typically, anytime you learn something, there's that initial spike of energy where you accelerate very quickly, and you're able to develop a certain degree of skill very fast. But what happens is you peak pretty quickly also. And if you look on the chart, it says real estate and MLM and day trading and internet, a variety of things people get involved in. And you'll see a quick spurt, and then it falls off. Now, what happens is, as you learn anything, you know, whether you're shooting basketball, hoops, or driving a car, you have to assimilate the learning. You have to assimilate the knowledge. And you almost, you know, take 2 steps forward and then 3 or 4 steps back before you really start learning at a deeper level. The problem with that, though, is for many people is when they start sliding back, if they're not consciously aware that this is happening, they think it's a waste of time. Or they work extra hard, but they really aren't embedding it at a deeper level. So they move on to the next thing. And rather than developing and moving up toward what I call the competency curve and crossing through that chasm, they're on to the next project. And so what happens is you get into this repeated pattern of quick acceleration, a lot of energy, burning out, moving on to the next thing over and over, whereas some of the people who really succeed, they stick with it. So the 80% that fail, the largely reason that I believe that happens is they quit too soon. Part of what Rare Success Secrets, the organization I'm working with, we're setting up around, is really taking a look at a lot of biographies and a lot of historical material. I was a history major in college, of people who were successful and left behind their tips of success. And quite often what you find is it was a lot of hard work, it was a lot of determination, and it was something that took place over time. Does that make sense, Claudia?
It makes a lot of sense. And I actually experienced that with a lot of my clients who start something and get really frustrated because they don't get the immediate results.
Mm-hmm.
And so then they have to go into, wait a second, why isn't it working? I was promised it was going to work, and it never did, and so they start something new.
Mm-hmm.
And I could think of a few that I'm going to just send this to immediately after because it does take a level of commitment and long-term.
Mm-hmm.
And so thank you for that. And I just want to let everybody know that you can submit your questions on the Internet on the homepage with peermomentum.com. You can submit questions. We will be addressing them at the last 15 minutes of the call. And also the notes that Bernie's referring to will be available on the site as well for you to refer to if you don't have them in right now.
Mm-hmm.
They are available right now, yes.
Yep. So part of it is you can think of success as really kind of a series of steps. Or it's a process, and it's the same thing. You know, my son is 2 years old now. He just turned two. But when he was learning to walk, you know, he'd get up and he'd fall over, and he'd get up and fall over, and he'd take 2 steps and he'd fall over, but he kept at it. And it takes time. And then the next thing you know, they're running around. But humans, as we get older, you know, especially if you believe in an attention deficit world that you should be an expert in 2 minutes at anything, you know, that's problematic. That's not typically the way it works. There may be some exceptions, some people who can do that, but that's not everybody. So if you go to slide 6, for example, a slide called Action is Not Always Advancement. The whole idea is you can be putting forth a lot of effort and a lot of energy and going nowhere. And the pictures on the left shows a cuckoo clock and a rocking chair. And the whole idea is pendulums and rocking chairs oscillate. You can rock and rock and rock all day, and the pendulum can swing faster and faster. But guess what? It's not going to go anywhere. It'll spend a lot of energy, but it's not going to advance in any direction. On the right side of the slide is a picture of a rocket ship and a person riding a comet, and I quote is, "Comets and rockets advance." That shows energy put in a purposeful direction, moving forward. Same way with your goals or your objections, your objectives, not objections. If they're purposeful and if there's a given direction that you've focused upon, you know, and set your sights upon and you can stick with it, you can start moving and advancing. So the next slide goes called Are Your Actions Keeping You in Place, and there's a picture of people running on a treadmill, driving you in circles, which a couple people on a outdoor track running around in circles, or advancing you forward, which shows some long-distance runners. Now, they're all running, and if you just looked at it at a higher level and said, well, you know, runners and we're getting in shape and exercising, yes, they all will, but they're not necessarily all going to get anywhere. The person going in place is the person that puts forth a lot of energy and action and can't seem to get moving. The person in circles is the one that goes back and forth. And then the other person is moving forward. And now we're getting into that 20% and understanding why the 95% fail. Because these are people that are committed. They're willing to put forth action and effort, but they're not going very far. So the next slide is called Why Creating is Superior to Problem Solving. A lot of this is based on the work of a gentleman named Robert Fritz, who is an author, and I don't want to call him a coach. He's a little different than that. But he's a teacher and an educator, and he lives up in Vermont. I took some classes with him a few years ago. But Robert's background is he is an artist. He's a musician and a composer. And what he did was he took a look at how music is composed and the structure of music. So, for example, in music, there's very few things by design. Even if you get into improvisation, there's a rhythm or a structure that underlies everything. And if you can determine those structures, you can move forward and advance with the music. So creating is superior to problem solving. And the whole idea is when you create something, you're creating something and designed to produce a specific result and move you forward. If whether it's a painting, a piece of sculpture, a baking a cake, making your breakfast or something, you have a specific result. And it's that ability to have a specific result that creates what they call tension or that energy for advancement. So it's a tension resolution system. Have you ever had a situation, Carla, where there's something you really, really wanted to do and you didn't have time, but you couldn't get off your mind and you almost had to either stop what you're doing or resolve the tension?
Oh, absolutely. It happens every day. I have 2 little kids.
Yep. And that's because you need to. There's a part of you moving you in that direction. Now, problem solving, on the other hand, which is what most people get involved with, is designed to eliminate a problem. It doesn't necessarily create a solution. So people think, well, if I solve the problem, then I've created a solution. No, you just have absence of problems. And the example I give is just because you've taken out the trash, which is solving a problem, doesn't mean that you have a clean house, which is your desired result that you're trying to create. You know, there's extra effort and work that goes into it.
Right.
Just because you get out of bed in the morning and drive to the gym doesn't mean you're creating health and wellness. You have to actually work on the machines and adjust your diet. Okay?
Right.
So the same point is on the next slide, creativity is not creating. The whole idea of people saying, well, creative problem solving and I'm being creative, et cetera, doesn't necessarily mean you're creating a solution or a desired result, which is where we started the whole conversation of how do you get from where you are to where you want to be. So brainstorming and mind mapping, which are good tools, are quite often designed around creativity. The challenge there is they're designed to make lots of alternatives, lots of ideas, but there's not necessarily a clearly defined desired result or objective. It doesn't advance you in a specific direction, and it can actually distract you from achieving the objective, because it produces so many different alternatives that you lose focus, you dilute your efforts, and it pulls you off course. Having focused sequential efforts, actions, and attention is what it takes to do creating. And that's the process, and it's a real process you can learn, and all of us kind of knew it originally, but we forget it. Process for producing desired results or key objectives, and it develops the clarity and the actions that advance you toward the result and focus and shorten the distance between where you are and where you want to be. So Claudia and I had the conversation around the mentoring program, saying, I asked her, why did you, and I'll ask you here, why did you sign up for the mentoring program?
Well, because when I saw Jay, I had hope. He gave me hope that I could actually finish and complete something. It sounded very appealing.
Okay, so you had a desired outcome, but in some cases it may not have been as clearly defined as you needed it to be. Because Jay, that was one of the things that I found in the program, and if others are on the call probably as well, he didn't clearly define the outcome. It was the whole, trust me, we'll get you there.
Right.
Which kind of falls then back to us to really define what our outcome is for the program. Because if not, you'll get drawn off in lots of different directions. Although he did give steps, he didn't necessarily give a sequence that was very linear. It was more try this, try that. And that's probably the nature he has. So partly of why that happens, if you go to the next slide, which is 10 for those that are following along, genius, quite often, you could define as focused actions plus advancement over time. There's a belief that says if you want to become a genius in anything, if you devote 5 to 10,000 hours doing it, you will become a master, a virtuoso, or a genius. Now, it's a little less than the 25,000 number, but it's basically saying you focus on what you do. There's plenty of stories. Michael Jordan got cut from his basketball team when he was in high school, but he practiced and became world-class athlete. Now, it didn't transfer, though. If you notice, for those who remember, he tried to play baseball as well. And when he tried to play baseball, he kind of failed at it a little bit and went back to basketball. But he hadn't put the time and the effort into it. Tiger Woods is another example. He's been playing golf since he was 2 or 3 years old. And that amount of time, attention, and advancement is really what does it. And I have some pictures there of Da Vinci, Einstein, Mozart, Ella Fitzgerald, Fred Astaire, for those who know who he is, was a dancer from the 40s and 50s and 60s. And when he auditioned originally to be in the movies and dancing, he was rejected. And they said, you know, he can kind of act a little bit, can kind of dance a little bit. But he became a world-class dancer over time. And Jay's picture's there, too. One of the more interesting things I got out of the program, I actually have some of Jay's stuff from the 90s that I bought. And there's a set of videos he has, which you can pick up on eBay and a few other places, called My Life in Marketing, where Jay talks through the process he went through. So, and did I share this with you, I believe, in one of our conversations?
Yes, you did. And it's fabulous information.
Yeah, so for the benefit of the others there, Jay Abraham, who's in, you know, Armani suits and jackets and ties and has his entourage and is getting paid millions of bucks, wasn't always there. He was a... and he talks about it a little bit, not as much as he used to. He was 20 years old, was married with 2 kids, didn't go to college, and had to find a way to support himself, and tested and tried lots of things. And in the video, he takes through his life of kind of what took place. And there was ups and there were downs. And the most poignant moment I saw out of the video was he tells a story of how it was Thanksgiving, and the only way he could afford to buy a turkey was he had to sell his old car to get money for Thanksgiving dinner, but then he sold the car and he couldn't get home, and he had asked the guy who sold him the car to give him a ride home.
Wow.
Now, that's probably a lot further back than many of us who paid the money to go to the mentoring program. And possibly one reason why, if I interpret, although I could be wrong, he is a harsh taskmaster about a little things, because he knows what it's taken to overcome a lot of this. And you can almost trust to a high degree if he tells you to do it, it's because he's done it himself. Comments, questions before?
No, I get it now. I get it. And eventually I hope you will touch upon that, is that he's been there, done that, so he's not someone that's going to hand walk you through the process. He expects you to do it because that was the commitment.
Yeah, and no one helped him. I mean, he had mentors. I mean, and you were at the event where David Wagenford, one of his mentors, came on. And here's a man who was a millionaire and gazillionaire, and he'd go and they'd have conversations. And he said David would give him, you know, vouchers to have dinner on the way home. And that's probably, on one level you may think, oh, that was just nice of him to give him vouchers, but it's probably because he didn't have the money to buy dinner on the way home. And it's interesting also, David didn't say, I'm going to give you a job, I'm going to, you know, make you rich or anything. It's basically, I'll let you benefit from my knowledge. It's kind of the same as the whole Napoleon Hill, Andrew Carnegie model, where Napoleon Hill was asked by Carnegie, you know, I'll introduce you to all the richest people and wealthiest successful people in the world, but I won't pay a dime, but I want you to figure out what makes them all successful. And his point was, if you can figure it out, you won't need me to give you any money because you'll be able to do it on your own. And at the end of the day, that's kind of where we all kind of fall back to, is being on our own. in my perspective. So now let's shift gears a little bit and get into some of the harder stuff.
Sure.
So I talked about pendulums, I talked about oscillation, and I talked about advancement. And this is some stuff I've adapted from Robert Fritz. And at the end, I give some references to some books he has, which is some very good stuff. He doesn't make as much as Jay, but at least 5 years ago, he'd get paid about $15,000 a day to consult the businesses. But he talks a lot about oscillation patterns. And really, it's where you have two desires, but they're in conflict. And so slide 11 kind of shows an oscillatory pattern. And the way you read the chart, for those who can see it, and if not, I'll walk the rest of this through, is you have a desire, that something you want to achieve, which develops tension that drives you through to an action. At the same time, you have a conflicting desire, which pulls you away from the actions you were doing and drives you toward a conflicting action. But because you have these these equal desires, you rebound. You get pulled back into the initial desire, and you do those actions, and you get pulled in the second desire. So you go back and forth like a pendulum or like a ping pong ball. People do this, companies do this, et cetera. It's the same way, you know, I want to get in shape, I go to the gym, I work out, I suddenly lose 5 pounds and take a couple inches off the belt, and then I say, well, now I'm losing weight, I can sleep in a couple mornings, which then I stop going to the gym, and then I start getting the weight back, and then I say, oh, I got to go to the gym again, and you just go back and forth like a ping pong ball. The second slide where I give an example in business, new products versus cost-cutting. A company will say, hey, we need to have new products. So they'll start to invest funds in developing products, but it takes time to show a return. And so suddenly they say, we're spending so much money, we need to cut costs. So they cut the programs and they cut the new products. And then they suddenly say, well, wait a minute, we can't cut everything, we need new products. So they start to invest again, and it's that whole bust and boom mentality. The same thing applies if you look at slide 13, and this is, I tried to work out kind of in a personal development context. You decide you want to work on yourself, which then you focus your effort and attentions on doing the things to grow internally, and you feel pretty good about it, and then you say, well, I need more skills, so I'll go to the seminar, which then takes you out of your internal focus and puts you in an external focus. So you start focusing on all the 2,000 tasks they gave you to do at the seminar, which then dilutes your initial efforts, which was working on yourself. So you say, I have all these books, and they go in the closet, and the notes stay there, and you start working on yourself again. And then you start to focus, and then you get back to the seminar. Has this ever happened to you?
Too often.
Okay. Now, the whole premise is there's nothing wrong with having conflicting desires, but you have to at some point determine what's your highest desire, and you start to subordinate things. And this actually comes out in a lot of the Abraham tape for those who were in the program, when some of his speakers talked about how many priorities can you have at any one time, and people said, well, 5 or 10 or 3. He goes, no, you can only have one priority at a time, because that's what makes it the priority. The same way when Jay talks about what's the highest and best use of your time. At any time, you got to figure out what's the most important thing. Doesn't mean the other things don't have importance, but it's all relative or related to the most important thing. And if it's not the most important thing, then you need to change it, and that you can do. But you need to really be aware of the fact that you're doing this or you're going through these cycles, because if whether you're aware of it or not, you're still subject to it. You know, I want to spend more time with my family, so in the evenings I start playing with my kids, take my wife out to dinner, and then suddenly I say, but my business isn't going, I need to spend more time with that, and then I'm locking myself in my office, and I go back and forth that, and the kids are unhappy, and my wife's unhappy, and I got to spend more time with them, and you go back and forth.
Right.
So slide 14 is, why do 95% fail? And my perspective, a lot of this is it's because your conflicting desires sabotage your advancement. You keep shifting your priorities around and around and around, and so you never advance. And this ties back to the slide in the beginning with the mountains. You know, you may have a desire to get rich quick, and you start on a program that will, over time, develop wealth or riches, but guess what? It's not happening fast enough, so you jump to the next one. You start oscillating because you're balancing, I mean, want to get rich versus the speed to get rich. So conflicting desires produce an oscillating pattern, and you'll go 2 steps forward, then you'll go 2 steps back, and your actions do not necessarily produce any advancement in your life. So how do you start to overcome this? And a lot of that is, I hate to say this to everybody, but it's a certain degree of self-discipline, and that discipline is required to focus your efforts in support of your own advancement to your desired goal or end state. And only you can define what that desired goal or that end state is, because person A will have Claudia has hers, Fabrice has his, I have mine, my wife and kids have theirs, and there's nothing wrong with that. The quote I put is, if you're not clear on your destination, any road will take you there. But you have to define that for yourself. At the same time, you have to take into account your responsibilities toward others, in my opinion, and I understand some may agree and some may not, but I will explain to you why I take that tack in a minute. So prioritization and determination of the sequence is what keeps you on track advancing toward your goals, because you have to be very, very clear on what your desired end state is. If it's, I will grow my sales by 30% this year, and I know I need to contact 20 people a day, then that's what I need to do. And if I don't do that, then I know I'm not going to achieve those results. So the case for responsible, ethical ruthlessness, and really this applies, I came up with the term in my own life, because with family, with children, with my own business, with the needs of my employer and the rest, I have 50 hours to try to cram into a 24-hour day, and I got to get some sleep as well. And I found I had to get really, really ruthless and hard with myself and really aware of time wasters or things that pull me off of the track of what I wanted to achieve. And everything has to pay a price or justify its existence to a degree in my life. And what I mean by that is if I get up in the morning and I'm going to do some writing or I'm going to edit a book, but I want to start checking email for a half hour or surfing the web, I have to be very mindful that, hey, this isn't serving my higher purpose or what I want to achieve. And more importantly, if what I want to achieve is going to take 5,000 or 10,000 hours and I've just wasted two or three, I've just set myself back. So it really comes back into having that sense of being a little bit ruthless in defense of what you're trying to do. Now, the reason why I say responsible is I also believe highly that no person is an island. If I was a single person living on my own, my time is my own, but I'm not that way. I have to be accountable, and I do have obligations to myself and to other people, and so I have to take those into account in order to be responsible about it. Ethics vary from person to person. I've heard a lot of success people talk about how they lost everything and lived in their car for months or went to the basement of their neighbors, and that's the price you have to be willing to pay. Well, in my life, and I'm not willing to pay that price, especially for my family and my kids. And that gets into, a choice that I've made. But at the same time, I have to balance that point out. Ruthlessness without mercy or compassion is just that whole point of being very disciplined. When I was in the service, for example, going through flight school, if you've ever seen Officer and a Gentleman and you've seen the scenes where they're in training and in swimming pools, that's very close to the way it is. And at any time, you have to understand, you're there on your own choice. You can always quit. But at the same time, if you want to progress and move forward, you've got to pass these tests and trials or they'll drop you out of the program. And you learn you have to do what it takes. And some people, it comes very easy. Others, a little bit of work and effort. Some people, you have to work your butt off. But if you want to achieve that goal, that's what you have to do. And that's, again, that being that disciplined and ruthless. So in a world filled with conflicting desires and distractions that can sabotage the attainment of your desired end state, you have to be ethically ruthless in support of your goals while maintaining your obligations. And that's kind of the premise that I follow these days. And if those actions, distractions did not advance your cause or purpose, you need to challenge or question their utility. And the quote I gave Claudia at the seminar was, just because something's useful doesn't mean you're ever going to use it. And if you're not ever going to use it, then how useful is it really?
Right.
Because there'll be plenty of seminars and events and dinners and dances and other things, but if it's not going to serve the higher purpose or the desired in-state goal that you've set out for yourself, then you got to question why it's there, because it can pull you off track. Make sense?
But yeah, absolutely. And, I mean, it's hard processing, but it's the reality.
Yeah, that's what it takes sometimes.
I don't want to hear it.
I know, it's not fun. But it's an example is, and now at the same time, you can leverage other skills. You can leverage other people. I do a lot of web stuff on my own, and I could hire someone eventually to do that, but I've chosen to take it on at this point. But it takes me away from other things. So at any given point, now, you can't outsource your own life, unfortunately, but you can outsource some tasks, but you need to maintain some control over it. So chart 16, and then we'll wrap the slides up and kind of go to a little freeform, is what's called a structural tension chart. And this is, again, something that Robert talks about in his books. And it seems very simple, and people say, well, this looks just like a work plan, but it's actually a little different than that. And I drew this out for Claudia on a napkin at the seminar, and the whole idea was saying, in order to move forward from where you are to where you want to be, you've got to develop this tension. And part of that starts by, for those who can't see it, imagine two rectangles, one over the other, separated by a bunch of smaller rectangles that say steps. And then the bottom and the top rectangles are connected by arrows. And the whole premise is the bottom rectangle is where you are today. And you have to be very, very clear and very explicit and quantify where you are. So if I am an author that has a half-written book and a website with X number of pages, and I have, you know, two or three other joint ventures I'm looking to set up. And if where I want to be is an author in the next year with 3 completed books and 4 edited books and a 100-page site and 20 joint ventures, then you have to work out what are the steps it's going to take to get there. And part of it comes down to ratios. If I want 20 joint ventures and I know I have to contact 10 people before I can get one, then it's going to mean I need to contact 200 people. So you work out all those steps of what it's going to take to get from point A to point B. And then the question you have to ask yourself is, if I do those steps, will I get there? Because what you're doing is you're starting to guarantee your outcomes. And if you lay this out and you go through this process, and I'm oversimplifying it a little bit, but what happens is suddenly what used to be so far off and ambiguous becomes very clear of this is what it's going to take to get there. So in the case of the seminar or with the Abraham, the template, the reality I wanted to create was I can't afford to pay Jay $5,000 an hour, but I would like feedback on my business venture. Part of the thing I need to do to get there is to complete the template. And so I went through it and printed it out and said, okay, it's 100 pages, and I have X amount of time, and I need to do so many pages a day. And did I do it? No, because I got distracted. But one of the promises I made to myself was I am not going to go to this event and with it out complete, because I don't want to be one of the people where he says who didn't do it that has to raise their hand. And I worked through those steps. Now, were there other projects I had to put on hold or for a while? Of course. But, again, it was mentally going through that process of what is it going to take to get there. So, and we'll start to wrap up. Key questions to ask yourself, and that's one of the things I put in for today. The number one question you may want to ask yourself is, do my actions move me forward or distract me from my specific objectives and cause me to oscillate? So if you have committed yourself, and really it's making a promise to yourself to achieve a goal or work towards something, you have to ask yourself at some point of how important is it to you. Because if you're willing to oscillate away from it, then it might not have been that important. And Jay's talked about that on his calls when he said, you know, some people might find out that they really don't want to be an entrepreneur. It takes a lot more work than they thought. And that may be the best thing for them to realize, I'd rather work for a living. You know, I may not like it, but that suits me better. So, again, if your goal is to, like with Pure Momentum, to grow the community to 10,000 or 20,000 or 50,000, then the question is, are you willing to pay the price for that? And there's several supporting questions that I've listed. You know, have you defined that ultimate objective or that desired outcome? The reason you need to define it and be as clear as possible is so you recognize when you're on track, when you're off track, and you can recognize it when you get there. Because when you hit that objective, you guess what? It's going to blow up to another objective.
Yeah.
And it's that continual path of advancement and moving forward. There's no necessary, you know, it's the whole idea that it's the journey, not the destination. You keep advancing. And once you get in a mindset of advancement, you can just continue growing and growing and growing. So some other questions, how will I recognize and measure my success and be quantitative about it? What are the required steps? If I perform these steps and actions, will I advance? What do I need to maintain my focus? Am I able to maintain my obligations while achieving these goals? And am I willing to pay the price? So slide 18, for those who could see it, shows Pat Morita or Mr. Miyagi from The Karate Kid on the left side and a picture of Jay Abraham on the right side. And it says, what does Mr. Miyagi and Jay Abraham have in common? And the caption under Mr. Miyagi, for those who saw The Karate Kid, when he's teaching Ralph Macchio to karate, is he gives him a couple sponges and goes to the car and says, wax on, wax off. And Ralph Macchio is like, this is crazy. This isn't learning karate. And he just gently says, wax on, wax off. And Jay always point on the calls is watch the videos, you know, and fill out your template. And people say, well, this and I'm having problem. Watch the videos and fill out the template. And the whole point is when you're dealing with a mentor versus a coach, and that's one of the points Jay made, which is what attracted me to the project, he said a coach supports you in doing what you want to do. A mentor tells you what it takes to get to where you want to go. And the whole premise is if whether you're in a mentoring program or a coaching program, and again, it's that awareness and mindfulness, if you follow the process, the results will take care of themselves. So Abraham M4 Revisited, which is slide 19, talks about some of the things that Abraham mentions, and I tried to put them in a little context of the presentation today. So I already mentioned the mentor versus the coach, and the question to ask yourself is have you done what your mentor has asked you to do in support of your desired outcome? Because if you haven't, then you have the question of how much of a priority or how real was that goal to you? He talks a lot about leverage, and again, that's are your actions the best ones aligned to serve your advancement? because you can advance slowly or you can advance quickly in a bigger way, and that helps shorten that learning curve. He talks about highest and best use. Are your efforts aligned to produce the optimal results towards your end state? So, yes, it would be fun to take this new course or learn this other new skill, but if it's not the highest and best use of your time, you have to question it. I deal with that at my day job because I've come to realize it's not the highest and best use of my time. But it serves another purpose, which is being responsible toward the care of feeding of my family because my wife's a stay-at-home mom, and that's the decision we made. But the question I'm asking now is, are there other ways to achieve that objective that would align closer with the higher best use? Force multiplier effect, are your multiple actions aligned in sequence to produce advancement towards your goal? And how high is high? And that's from his interview with Tony Robbins. Have you identified and clarified the steps to achieve your stretch goal? The nice part about the whole structural attention process is you can have a practical process to really achieve stretch goals because you start to think through what are all the steps it's going to take to achieve it. Now, you made a comment to me, for example, Claudia, when we talked last week, and saying, you know, people quite often ask themselves, am I worthy of this or am I not worthy? And I think that can be, in some cases, a flawed question. Because if you know the steps it takes, and if you're willing to do those steps and perform them, it's never a question of whether you're worthy or not. You do what it takes, and you can succeed. Now, some may succeed at a higher level, some may succeed at a lower level. It's like a friend of mine used to say when I was in school. He said, we may all be the cream of the crop, but there's top cream and there's bottom cream. You know, some people are a little bit higher cream than others. But if you're in the cream, you're in the cream. Same way moving towards success. Does that make sense?
It makes sense. It makes sense clearly, and you hit it, and this applies not only to anyone here on the call that has taken or worked with Jay Abraham, but any mentor. It could be Harv Eker, it could be anybody. It's all about what are you willing to do and really how focused are you, what is really your desired outcome, and what are you willing to do for it?
Yeah, and even a case of does this, and you can be ruthless with them. You know, there's hundreds of gurus and courses and the rest, and they all have their answer. But guess what? Do you serve my higher purpose to achieve my goals? Because, you know, your goal is to sell the course and to have me take it and make money. And there's nothing wrong with that. I won't pass judgment over anyone's right to an income. But if it doesn't serve my purposes of what I'm trying to achieve, then it's questionable why do I do it at this time? Because it'll probably still be around, or I'll do something different that is more closely aligned with what I want to do.
But, you know, Bernie, I have found in my journey, and I'll speak for myself, is that oftentimes I've had awesome ideas, and I see fantastic resources out there, and I get hopeful. I'm one that appreciates creativity. You know, I really appreciate when somebody says, I've been there, I've done that, I can show you the way. Presentation you made today, I can clearly get it now. It's a formula that has worked for them. The question is now, am I willing to do what it takes?
Will you do what it takes? I mean, if you want to be a world-class painter or a world-class copywriter, a good example, and Jay talks about this, is he wants people to take action, not just intellectualize it. You can read all the copy in the world, but unless you start writing copy, you won't become a copywriter because copywriters write copy, and your first attempts aren't going to be world-class, but you grow more proficient in the skill over time. The same way with the tapes. If you just listen to the tapes once, you're not going to get it all. You got to listen to them over and over and over, and that's part of that learning process where it really starts to embed itself in the subconscious. And there's not time for it today, but I would encourage people, and there's another, I won't call him a guru, but another a marketing expert named Dan Kennedy, who's written several books on time management and direct marketing and direct response. And he just wrote a book about information marketing. And it's very interesting. I haven't read it yet, but I bought a course from Dan that I paid about $1,000 for on information marketing. And at the end of the day, you have to understand it's a business. And there's a structure and a process of the way leads are generated and everything else, and upsells and cross-sells and referrals. And what happens in all of this is if you're not careful, you can fall into it and serve someone else's purpose, which, again, it's not a right or a wrong. It's just the way it is,
right.
Which is why it's the best course out of the whole Jay Abraham process was actually watching him in action at the seminar and the rest, because everything he taught, he did.
Right.
And what's funny is you can be caught up in a structure of what's taking place, but if you're not aware of it, you won't notice it. So he comes, for those who were there that would have seen this, he said, we're not going to sell you, we're not going to sell anything, but Thursday afternoon, Friday afternoon, we'll talk about some other options, but we're not going to sell you. And then he got up and he sold to people. He was going to pass out a sheet, and you don't have to, just read it when you want.
Yeah, and I was quite tempted. I was quite tempted, but
I committed
not to. Of course
you were. I was too.
I know.
I'm like, I'd love to get the passive income course, but then for me, it's like, if I really want to get my publishing business up and running and faster and accelerated, that will take time away. And I promised myself, and I have got a $1,000 Abraham course in the closet I never listened to. So for next year, I'm going to listen to the other course. And get. And I told you this on the phone the other day. I said, I'm sure if I call his office later and say, hi, I'd like to buy that other course I didn't take, and here's a cashier's check for $2,000 cash, I'm sure they'll send it. Because that's what he'll do, because that's what he's taught us. So let me just wrap up and we can kind of talk. So seven steps.
The last thing on hope, I mean, and I can think of many people, including myself, on going back to that slide number four on it takes time and action to develop an outcome. I mean, competency or adequate or proficient competency in any area can take up to 1,000 hours. You said 600, but put it out there, people. You just hit me.
Take time.
It takes time, and you know, Fabrice and I bang our heads here with Peer Momentum. It's like, yeah, we're developing it. The intention is good, but there is a lot of work behind it, and mastering the process is not obvious.
And out there
for everyone, whatever you're doing the right thing. Just keep doing it.
Yeah, and make sure you have an idea of what your end state or your objective is. You know, a great thing for me. I mean, I went to the conference, and I didn't. You know, I'm still working full time as well as doing things on the side. And everyone was talking about all the wonderful things they're doing. And at first, I felt really kind of bad about it. And I said, well, let me look at what I've actually applied. And I got up and went to the microphone and told a little bit of my background and what I did. And what was fascinating for me was after I got down and during the break, people came up to me and said, "Wow, what you're doing is so exciting! That's great." I'm thinking, I haven't done anything, but guess what? I've done more than they have in that area that I focused on. So to them, they're like, wow, you're way out there. I'm like, well, not really, but okay, sure. Of course. And to be honest, and this is why I said the information marketing stuff's interesting. A lot of these people, and there's nothing wrong with this, they make more money selling the courses than they do ever did from the first thing. It's a business. And there's nothing wrong with that if it's useful and it helps people.
Right,
but you
got
to be mindful.
Yeah.
Pardon me?
Yeah, and we got to learn from that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So the Poseidon Adventure, I mentioned this real quick. It's one of my favorite movies, and I watch it every couple of years. I've got it on video. But it's a fascinating movie, and I'd recommend people watch it for the success lessons in it. Not one of the newer versions. I can't vouch for them because I haven't seen them. But the premise of the movie is it's an ocean liner, and it's New Year's, and there's a big party going on, and a big wave comes and capsizes the ship. So the top of the ship is underwater, and the survivors are all in the grand battle room, and they don't know who's left and who's alive and who's not. But they know they've got to move and they've got to do something. And the Gene Hackman character becomes a leader, and he's saying, people, you know, we think we can get out of here, and we'll prop the Christmas tree up and start climbing up toward the bottom of the ship, because if a rescuers come, that's where they're going to have to cut into the ship. And the ship's purser is sitting there saying, you know, stay calm, stay calm, stay where you are, someone will come and get us. And they go around to all the people to try to get them, and I think about seven volunteer to try to go. And they're waiting and waiting, and, you know, most won't move until suddenly the glass starts breaking, the water starts rushing in. And suddenly everybody's panicking and scrambling, and so the whole point is most people aren't going to wait for someone to save them, or most people wait for someone to save them, because it's easier to look outside versus inside yourself. And even when there's actions you can take to save yourself, most people still won't take them. And the scene that always struck me was, they have this Christmas tree propped up, and the seven who are leaving, and this one guy, the water's rushing, and he climbs up, and he almost makes it, and then the tree slips away, and it crashes back into the water. And so the seven have to keep moving, or seven or eight, and they have to seal the door, because if they don't seal the door, the water's going to come rushing. So they leave all these people, you could say, to perish. Mm-hmm. But the point is they weren't willing to take the actions to do anything in the first place. They made their choice, and they made their commitment. And it's not a question of pity or feeling bad. We all have to make choices, and some of them are harder than others. And that, again, ties back to that question of ruthlessness, not in a ruthless, mean way, but saying, you know, at the end of the day, this is a competitive world. The same way as they start to travel through the ship, Different people are called upon to exert leadership. There's the young kids and the old woman, played by Shelley Winters. And they have to keep moving, and they keep facing adversity, and their paths are blocked, and they have to go around and then go underwater. And some would say, well, they're just lucky, but it's this whole idea of action as they move forward. Now, one of the things, number six on the list, everyone doesn't make it. Along the way to try to get out, there are people that perish.
Yeah.
Because there are no guarantees. Now, some of them do get out. And when they get rescued, they said, did you save anyone else? And they said, no, you're the only ones we saved. So in all of these things, as we move on our path of success or whatever we've chosen, there's no guarantee you're going to make it. But if you don't take actions and you don't take steps, then you definitely won't get very far. So, in summary,
yes.
Some recommended reading. My favorite book, I put the number one. It's the movie with Dustin Hoffman and Steve McQueen, but the book is much better by Henri Charrière called Papillon. And it's the story of he is a prisoner convicted to Devil's Island off the coast of Haiti and his attempts at escape. And it's a wonderful book because here's a guy who knows what he wants to do, which is I'm going to escape from this prison. And they throw him in solitary confinement for 2 years, and he finally gets out, and the first thing he's doing is he's planning his escape. And he escapes for a while, and they recapture him, and they put him back in for 5 years, and when he gets out, he starts planning his escape again. He doesn't quit. He won't give up because he wants to get out of there. And I love that because it shows that definiteness of purpose, and he knows what his higher objective is, and he marshals and focuses all of his actions. And even though he has setbacks, he keeps moving on. So for an entrepreneur, I think it's a great read. It's not a business book, but it's fascinating. A couple books by Robert Fritz, The Path of Least Resistance and The Path for Least Resistance for Managers. If any of the stuff I talked about has some appeal, both of those are great books. The Path of Least Resistance for Managers is actually makes it very practical and applicable. But a lot of what Robert teaches or what he works on is this: how to become the creative force in your own life. Because once you learn how to create or inspire this, you can take it in any direction. It's not just business or development, but you can create whatever results you want in your life. You know, changing jobs, improving things. They've taken it even into third world development and urban communities. That you know, how do you create solutions and stop looking for the government or the outside to come out? Stephen Covey's The Eighth Habit. I actually during the mentorship he mentioned this, and the whole point. What I got out of The Eighth Habit, which first I thought this is Stephen Covey trying to have a racket because he already has seven habits. But what he really talks about is this idea of servant leadership. And the people who make the biggest changes serve the most. And the two cases, and there were several in the book, but that came to mind, he talks about Mother Teresa, and he talks about Gandhi, and he also talks about Anwar Sadat. And these are people that overcame tremendous odds, and you would think could not achieve what they achieved because they weren't rich and they weren't necessarily famous and everything, but they did. And so Gandhi, for example, you know, via moral power and servant leadership, and Martin Luther King is the same way, you know, changed the face of India. And the point I always come to is if you were, and it's in the movie, Gandhi's thrown off a train in South Africa because he's a person of color and spends the night on the train platform. And if you'd come across him at that point, you'd say, who is this guy? He just, you know, he doesn't amount to much. But he pondered it all night. And over time, and it took time, he changed the world. And that's really something that, you know, all of us have that ability to do at smaller and large levels and to create the results we want. It's really drive for change. And lastly, I mentioned Claude Hopkins just because for the Abraham folks, he often talks about it. I put a link there. It's in the presentation. Or if you go to my website, I actually give it away currently as a free download. But also I do some stuff with lulu.com where if you'd like a hard copy, you can purchase it. But there is a version available for free. And feel free to distribute it. But a good example is when Jay talks about Hopkins, he read the book 50 times.
Wow.
So we can say, well, he's the guru and he knows everything. But to have the discipline to read something 50 times, most people can't even read something once or twice.
Right.
And even though, and that's why I said it's funny, because everything, a lot of the things I mentioned today, I won't say Jay did them exactly or not, but he follows a similar path. He has an objective, he knows, and he's willing to do what it takes. And he's disciplined about it. And I know some people, he says, say he's arrogant and the rest, but I think he walks the walk, and he's like, I'm willing to do it, and if you're not, well, I don't have the same time for you. So that's kind of it. And I hope it met the objectives of the community and what we had set out to do, and you know, we're free to take questions and talk for a little bit before we wrap up.
Absolutely, Bernie, and I just wanted to emphasize that willing to do whatever it takes, because when you do what you love, it shouldn't be work. I mean, in the sense of painful work. Yes, we stay up, you know, 16, 18 hours a day, because we're committed, because we're going forward, because we see the vision. But it does, it should be something you truly love.
If you're going to spend all the time, it should be something that serves a higher purpose. And that's why also I threw in the part about being responsible. Because, you know, if you're working 18 hours a day, then you may not be taking care of your health. You may not be taking, eating right and a variety of things. And for some, that's the price they're willing to pay. But you have to actually ask yourself sometimes and say, if I move forward, is it something that has to get done right away? Or as long as I get there, it doesn't matter. My wife always says, you've been working on your business stuff for a while. When's it going to show fruit? I said, look, whether it takes a year or 5 or 10, the goal is to get there. And there's learnings and things along the way. But it's something that I've made a commitment to. And it sounds like you and Fabrice have made the same commitment to the community.
Yes. And so here I have thank you, Bernie. Thank you. Here I have a couple questions.
Sure.
One is from Shira in Oakland. She says, could you please clarify what you meant by your comment about those that are single and living on their own and have no responsibility to others? Clearly, possibly a misunderstanding. She says, we do have plenty of responsibilities to others, plus creating structures and supporting our business and personal
life. I think I might not have been clear, and I apologize if that came across wrong. It actually goes back to a quote my brother told me. He was married with two kids, and I was still single. And he said, if there's anything you want to do in your life, do it now while you're single. And I didn't understand that. His point was, you have more free time now than you will ever have later. Because a lot of the obligations you have, some familial and others really are at a deeper level. But, you have a lot more control. Now, for example, my 3-year-old and my 2-year-old, they can't be left alone.
Right.
If I get up at 5 or 5:30 in the morning, I try to do work when the house is quiet. But if my daughter wanders in at 6:30, I can't just say, get out of here, go away. Suddenly she's thirsty or needs a drink. So it's not slighting single people at all, but just saying you have degrees of freedom that those of us with kids don't necessarily, or with pets don't necessarily.
Or with pets, too. That's right. And I think that was, I think I got it, and for sure we all apologize if it was misunderstood. There's another question here. How do you distinguish between stubbornness and perseverance? Of course, sometimes it's good to listen to what the universe tells you and accept to change what you're doing that's out of alignment. But what do you think about that? Because, people could be very stubborn, and I've seen this. They just keep doing and doing, and you're like, but that's not the right,
So this doesn't apply to the people on the call. But the quote I like. It's a riddle, actually. What do you get if you how do I phrase it right? What do you get if you motivate an idiot?
what do you get?
A motivated idiot. So the premise is there's a difference between stubbornness and perseverance, but it gets back to that choice. You're free to work and move toward whatever goal you have, and that's why I like the Poseidon Adventure. There's no guarantee. But there's nothing wrong with saying, I've chosen to change my direction or move on to something else. I've tried this, or I've given myself a year or two to make it work, or 3 or 5, and now I'm at a point that it hasn't, and I'm going to move on. And maybe I could have worked for 10 or 20. One of the most telling things for me, I took calculus in college, and it was a brutal course. The first session, I got a D-minus in it out of pity more than anything, because I went to the teacher every day trying to get help. And then I had to take the second calculus course because the Navy wanted me to do this. And I was studying, and suddenly there was one night right before the one of the first tests, and I realized that even if I study forever, I'm not going to get this because I don't know it. And that was hard because I hadn't been taught to quit. It was work hard. And I said, I'm not prepared. And I went and I asked my advisor if I could drop the class, and I did. And that was a hard lesson. But what I realized, and the second last point on it, and I want to make sure there's some other questions, you choose the mountain you climb. I have a friend of mine, for example, who's big on MLM, and he keeps trying to get me into MLM. And I said, that's not the path I want to take. That doesn't serve my desired outcomes. And he says, well, it helps people, does this, that, and the other. And I agree with all those things. But for me, that's not the higher purpose I want to do. And you have to pick the mountains you climb or understand which mountains you want to climb.
That's right.
Anything else?
Right. Yes, I have one from Carol Ostrom in Fort Collins, Colorado. She says, I have the rights to my late husband's book. It was published by HarperCollins, and it was in 7 languages. I'd like to get it republished, as it has a following. How can I do that, in parentheses, other than iUniverse or is that the best way?
Yeah, don't use iUniverse. The easiest way, the easiest, quickest way is if you go to lulu.com because it doesn't cost you anything to use Lulu. That will get it published. If you want to get distribution, and if you go to my website and hit the Contact Us form, please send me a note, and I can give you a little more amplification. Lulu is a good one. The other one I would refer you to is selfpublishing.com. There's a gentleman named Ron Pramshafer, and he has a lot of information where you can get a book self-published for literally under $1,000. The big thing is owning the rights to it and making sure that when it's published, that's what's called the ISBN number, the number on the back of the book, that you have bought those ISBN numbers. That's what registers you as the publisher with the rights. And if you have that, then you can get a lot more of the percentages of the royalties and the rest. But it comes down to really marketing the book. But if you have some questions, please, and also my email is Bernie Melanson, so Bernie.Melanson, B-E-R-N-I-E.Melanson at gmail.com. Just shoot me a note. I'd be happy to give you some hints.
Absolutely. And you, or you can send them to
Peer Momentum.
Host at peermomentum.com, and we will absolutely forward on to Bernie. There was a question here from Ellen Womsley in Anaheim. She says, can I give the date of this program to someone else? Of course, please. The recording will be available, if that's what you mean, about an hour after this call, and you can forward it on or bring or send people over to Peer Momentum for, you know, to access the call again. And here someone's asking, can you please repeat the source for the self-publishing? Did you say self-publishing.com?
Yep, www.selfpublishing.com.
And there was another one you had said.
Lulu.com, www.lulu.com.
Okay.
Also, if you go on to Amazon and type self-publishing, there's a gentleman named Dan Poynter. He's kind of the godfather of self-publishing. He has a book that you can read. And there's another one, if I can find the title that I'm reading right now, which is called The Well-Fed Self-Publisher, by Peter Bowerman, B-O-W-E-R-M-A-N. They're all excellent books. But again, it ties back to, they'll give you the information you need, but at some point you got to do it. With for the woman who has the manuals from her husband, if you got the original files, it's very easy. Otherwise, you got to get the files converted. But that can be done by scanning them in and editing them, et cetera.
Very good. That last book was The Well-Fed Publisher.
The Well-Fed Self-Publisher.
The Well-Fed Self-Publisher by Peter Bowerman.
Bowerman, B-O-W-E-R-M-A-N.
E-R. Okay, Bowerman. Very good. Well, Bernie, thank you. I just want to let everybody know that they can find your resources on the Peer Momentum website to link back to your website to get involved with what Bernie's doing. He's got an awesome program in development, and there are things he's already working on that you may want to be part of, as well as being in his company. He's an awesome individual who has amazing ways of just repurposing content, but also relooking at ways you can monetize what you do.
Mm-hmm. The whole concept of Rare Success Seekers kind of came to me because everybody, even on this call, and most people don't think of themselves as being very successful necessarily because society's kind of focused it on monetary rewards. But there's all kinds of successes, being a good parent, being a teacher, educating somebody, lots of things. And really, those concepts of rare success are something that I'm very interested in, and what I'd like to offer out to the community, if people are willing at going, is to, I'd love to hear the stories, because that's another book part-time that I'm starting to work on, is really taking, you know, people's success stories of how they've succeeded, but in a different context, you know, whether it might have been setting up a shelter or, you know, working with homeless or children or something else, because I think those are the really heartfelt successes, and for me even, you know, money's a nice thing to have, but it's not the ultimate objective, and I don't think the society necessarily feels the same way. But I'm gonna create some solutions and hopefully work with Peer Momentum to do other things like that.
Absolutely, absolutely, we're with you. And so, thank you, everybody. Just want to let you know we're having a teleseminar on the power of LinkedIn, LinkedIn.com, which is a powerful community networking website that hooks you with thousands of people that may be of reference and resource to you. We're having that teleseminar on November 26th. It's on the PureMomentum.com website. And also, the next book we're reading as a community is The 4-Hour Work Week by Timothy Ferris. We're coming together the first Saturday in February, I believe it's February 2nd, meeting at Ritz-Carlton's Worldwide, to connect, talk about the book, and network. So you have multiple ways of getting connected with Pure Momentum. We thank you for your trust. We thank you, Bernie, for your time. Have an awesome evening. Enjoy your family. And everybody have a safe and happy Thanksgiving.
Yep. Happy Thanksgiving, and it's been my pleasure. Thank you all.
Thank you, Bernie. Bye-bye.